hope you enjoy this message from South City C3, a location of C3 Church, Christchurch.
But I had a wee thought, a wee encouragement from a little rhyme that goes this way. Don't worry if your work is small and your rewards are few. Remember that the mighty oak was once a nut like you. Could say now, turn and say that the person beside you, but perhaps would better not. Now, we're going to read some of the words of Jesus, starting in Matthew 5, verse 21. This is verse 21, Matthew 5. You have heard that it was said to those of old, "You shall not murder, and whoever murders is liable to judgment. But I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother will be liable to judgment. Whoever insults his brother will be liable to the council, and whoever says, 'You fool,' will be liable to the hell of fire." And if we can move down to verse 43. "Love your enemies" is the heading in my version. "You have heard that it was said, 'You shall love your neighbour and hate your enemy.' But I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, so that you may be sons of your Father who is in heaven. For he makes his sun rise on the evil and on the good, and sends rain on the just and the unjust. For if you love those who love you, what reward do you have? Do not even the tax collectors do the same? And if you greet only your brothers, what more are you doing than others? Do not even the Gentiles do the same? You therefore must be perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect." In these verses, Jesus is talking about enemies and murder. You say, well, that doesn't apply to me. I've never killed anybody. I've never seriously contemplated it. One of the Ten Commandments, of course, is you shall not murder. It's easy for us to think, well, I've never murdered anybody. I'm not a bad person. Jesus, however, is going beyond the actual deed, the sin, the crime of murder, and he's looking at the heart. Let's backtrack now to the initial question I asked you. Have you ever been really, really hurt in life? Perhaps by a dreadful situation, perhaps by someone. And I want to go back to when I was a young Christian, and I was 18 when I became a Christian, and I had a marvellous experience of giving my life to the Lord, of my sins being forgiven and finding the joy of the Lord. I had become born again. I saw the world differently. It was as though there'd been a paper bag over my eyes that just sort of was torn open. And wow, I could see things. Things were just different. I was just amazed at this change in my thinking, and I wanted everyone to become a Christian. And the joy of my conversion, perhaps combined with optimism and idealism of youth, I rather naively thought, now I'm a Christian, life's going to be really good. I won't have too many troubles, life will work out fine. You might ask, how did that work out? How's that going for you? Well, life and experience have educated my thinking. Don't get me wrong, I love the Lord. I'm glad that I'm a Christian. Yet as well as joys and successes, life can have uphill sections. Life can have immensely difficult times. I also remember as a young Christian singing a hymn that sort of puzzled me. This hymn went something like, "He knows your heartache, he understands. Just leave your problem in his great hands." Another one spoke about Jesus healing the brokenhearted. And at age 18, I didn't know anything about heartache or feeling brokenhearted. And almost felt a bit guilty that I didn't. Because this hymn said God was going to help me in those situations. And how could he help me when I didn't feel that way? I can assure you I know all about those feelings now. I've done Heartache 101 and I scored really well. Probably took it through the honours level, I think. We might laugh now, but it was no laughing matter then. Yes, events of life can hurt us to the core of our being. How we react in these times and the attitude and spirit of our hearts is so important is really what Jesus is giving instructions about in the Sermon on the Mount. You can think, okay, I shouldn't be angry. Now it's up to me to do that. But that won't work. Our own willpower is not enough to fulfill these scriptures. We need the Spirit of Christ within us to provide the transforming power. We need Emmanuel, God with us. Colossians 3, verse 15 says, let the peace of Christ rule in your heart. It's wonderful when Christ's peace is ruling in our heart. It's terrible when negative emotions are ruling in our heart. Philippians 4, verse 7 says, and the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds through Christ Jesus. Life has a spectrum of difficulties that cross our path. At one end, we face people and things that are annoying, but we get over it. And at the other end, are huge life crises, the events that cause us deep hurt and grief and can tempt us to thoughts of anger and retaliation. The little events aren't so bad, but can still challenge us. I've got a wee illustration now. And as you know, Ashley has several dogs, and they're loving, energetic, delightful little creatures. But sometimes they can be naughty. Sometimes they do things they shouldn't, and sometimes they chew things they shouldn't. And now, I think there's a chair. Ash is a chair that got chewed a bit recently. It's a fairly ordinary chair, yet as special as a family heirloom that belonged to her great-great-grandfather. I got this picture of the damage with a question, who ate my chair? Then I got another picture sent through. If you can put that one up. Again I ask, who ate my chair? That's a picture of Denby. Denby looking rather approved and guilty. Did Ash feel a bit annoyed? I'm sure she did. Anger can be a natural reaction. Thanks, Robert, that's fine. Being angry and being happy are mutually exclusive feelings. As far as I know, you can't be angry and happy at the same time. Now, I don't think feeling cross or fleeting anger is the problem. But holding on to anger is, and especially when anger has got a hold of us. Some people, though, are less likely to get angry, and for them, they can just stew things over. I'm a bit like that, I have been. I know from personal experience that stewing and brewing is best to be avoided. So my first point is, how do we keep our emotions in check and guard our hearts? The verses I mentioned before were, let the peace of Christ rule in your heart, and the peace of God will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. These scriptures speak of God's power in us and of the Spirit of Christ being in us. This is the secret. God's power can transform our thinking. Now, these situations can take place in various forms. Sometimes we can have situations that affect us that involved with our family, sometimes relationships, sometimes work, sometimes finances. There's a whole lot of things that can get to us at times. And I had a situation one time involving an employer. And this employer seemed to have a tendency to regularly focus on someone and almost pick on his employees. I'd seen a number of colleagues get this treatment, and then it became my turn. And I seemed to be on the receiving end of what to me was harsh treatment. I'm not saying my performance was perfect or I couldn't have done better, but this employer seemed to zone in on me. And even when I was doing really well, as I thought, it didn't seem to be good enough. During this time, I often stewed about what had been said. I'd go over conversations in my mind and think, that wasn't fair. I was mumbling and grumbling inside. I remember being on holiday, and even on holiday, getting on this line of thinking and mumbling and grumbling. During these times, my joy in life had greatly diminished. My heart had become a target. It was as though the devil could get me with these attacks. This line of thinking had become a spiritual attack. Somewhere during this time, though, I discovered the secret of combating these attacks, and I found that if I prayed for this person, things would change. And this, I latched onto this. I thought, this is the solution. Every time I said, oh, he shouldn't have said that, he shouldn't have said that, that wasn't fair, I'd start thinking, dear Lord, bless this person. Give them a good day. Help things to go well for them. And what happened in my own life, in my heart, was quite a transformation. I just stopped having this negative thinking. And after a while, it just seemed to disappear altogether. Every time these thoughts came, I'd move in the opposite direction. God bless this person. Help things to go well for them. And that seemed to break the power that the devil had on my life. And in with a short time, I stopped having these struggles in my mind. It was as though the devil gave up on these attacks. I don't think he wanted me to bless the other person. Let's read in Luke chapter 6. In verse 27, it says, "But I say to you who hear, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you, pray for those who curse you, bless those who abuse you." Now, this employer wasn't my enemy, but the principle of blessing still applies. Verse 35, "Love your enemies, do good and lend, expecting nothing in return, and your reward will be great. And you will be sons of the Most High, for he is kind to the ungrateful and the evil. Be merciful, therefore, even as your Father is merciful." Did you get that verse? Sons of the Most High, and of course, daughters. What an amazing description. Imagine being called that. When we are acting like this, praying and blessing those who are against us, we are taking on the nature of Jesus. We are conforming to the image of his Son. God's description of us is we are becoming sons and daughters of the Most High. Point two, how do we go beyond anger to an attitude of love? 1 John 3 says, "For this is the message you have heard from the beginning, that you should love one another." And I wondered what the beginning was, and maybe it was when the Apostle John, as a young man, was at the Sermon on the Mount 50 or 60 years earlier, hearing Jesus speak these words, "But I say to you who hear, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you, pray for those who abuse you." Is that 11:30? Well, I'm going to have to give the short version. And I'm just getting into the good parts, thank you. Okay, I'll tell you the testimony of Marietta Jager, and I'll just do this off the cuff. Marietta Jager was a lady in America who went with her family on a holiday to Montana with five children. The children were in a tent, and in the morning they woke to find that the tent had been cut open and the youngest girl had disappeared. This is a dreadful story, and I just hope I don't crack up when I'm telling it, but it's every mother's worst nightmare. The child had been abducted. And a huge manhunt started, and Marietta had started off. At one stage, she was just overwhelmed with terror, thinking that her daughter might be dead. And then she moved into rage and anger that someone had done this. And she said to her husband, if I got this person, I'd kill them with my own bare hands. And I'd have a smile on my face. And she went to bed that night and felt a voice saying to her, "But that's not how I want you to think." And she said, "Well, it's this person deserves this. He deserves to die." And he heard this voice keep on saying, "But that's not how I want you to think." And she knew it was God speaking and decided, "I'll give God permission to change my heart." And he did. And she prayed for this man and took on an attitude of trying to care for this man and pray for his welfare. And when I heard this story some years ago, I was amazed and thought, how could you do that? And there was this... Yeah, a miracle had happened into her heart. Look, I'll just leave that bit there. I'm looking at time. We're going to have to whiz on. Actually, on hearing that story, I thought, what an example for me. And in several much lesser circumstances, I've thought of this and prayed for people who had hurt or wronged me. Now, my third point, holding on to anger can be emotionally and physically harmful. A pastor wrote a book one time, How to Deal with Anger Before It Deals with You. And it seems that if we don't deal with anger, it festers away inside and causes us harm on various fronts. And this is nothing new, because this effect, Proverbs says, a joyful heart is good medicine, but a crushed spirit dries up the bones. As the Message puts it like this, a joyful disposition is good for your health. Gloom and doom leave you bone tired. And Karen told me a wee interesting saying, why let someone who's hurt you, why let them continue to run around in your head? It's another wee saying that holding bitterness against someone is like drinking sulfuric acid and hoping the other person will die. I've got a wee rhyme I was going to say on this line, and I will, it's just for the fun of it. You might have heard wee stories about Fuzzy Wuzzy Was a Bear. Okay, chemistry test, what's the formula for water? Anyone know? H2O, what's the formula for sulfuric acid? H2SO4, thank you. Here's a wee rhyme to help you remember this thought. Fuzzy Wuzzy Was a Bear, poor Fuzzy is no more. What Fuzzy thought was H2O was H2SO4. Just a wee thought. Holding on to bitterness and anger is like poor Fuzzy, drinking something that proved fatal. Praying for others, however, is letting go of bitterness and anger. We are not only fulfilling the scriptures, but it's actually good for us. Emotionally we benefit, and physically we benefit. I have one more story, which I'll only mention in very brief, and it's a story of an American serviceman, Jacob de Cesar, and he took part in the Doolittle raid that dropped bombs on Japan. But he had to parachute. They ran out of fuel. He had to parachute to safety. He was captured by the Japanese and spent 40 months in prison and about 34 months in solitary confinement. And during this time, he suffered a lot, but he found that the worst suffering he had was the hatred that arose in his heart. And this hatred consumed him. And it was hatred for the enemy, hatred for the prison guards. And it was worse. He was just being so consumed by this hatred. He said it was nearly driving him crazy. But he remembered that he'd heard that Jesus could change people from hatred to love. And he pleaded with his captors that they'd give him a Bible, and they did. And he gave his life to the Lord, he changed his thinking. Instead of looking at the prison guards with hatred, he started looking at them with loving pity. After the war, he went back to Japan and started distributing tracts. And one of the people that was touched by one of these tracts was a man, Michio Fuchida, who had been the leading airman in the attack on Pearl Harbor. He gave his life to the Lord. And these two men actually toured for a number of years, speaking to thousands of people, and brought many to the Lord. Okay. I'll just try and wrap this up. These stories all testify that God's grace is still available to change hearts, to set us free from anger and bitterness, and to let us come into a place where His peace is ruling in our hearts and we're learning to forgive others and bless them. Colossians 3 says, forgiving each other as the Lord has forgiven you, so you must also forgive. I want to close quite quickly, if I've got time, with one or two astronomical pictures. If you could pop those up, please, Robert. Now, that's the Southern Cross. And you can see the Southern Cross there. And there's a wee interesting feature on the Southern Cross. Down to the there called the coal sack. And it was observed about 500 years ago that there was a dark patch by the Southern Cross. Okay, Robert, next slide, please. And that's just a wee illustration of where the cross is, where this nebula, the coal sack, is, and it blocks out quite a bit of the light. You can see it. Go and have a look at night time and you'll see it. And just above it is a wee area called the jewel box. Okay, next, thank you. That's the Southern Cross. You can see the dark patch. Okay, next, thanks, Robert. There's the close-up again, the dark patch. And just to the left of the left-hand star of the kite, if I can put it that way, or the cross, is it looks like a bright star. That's the jewel box. And if you get closer, it shows us the net. That's it there. That's the jewel box. And that was discovered by... called that way by Mr. Herschel, and Jesse's not here. I was going to make a connection with Jesse. He said he described it as a piece of fancy jewellery, and it's been called the jewel box, and it's been called that ever since. I see a parable in these two regions near the cross. One is a dark region that obscures the light. The other is like a piece of beautiful jewellery. We have a choice as to which region we want to place ourselves, in a place of darkness or in a place of beauty. Can we have that next one, please, Robert? Someone's sort of taken this illustration a bit further and drawn across there over the Southern Cross. You can see the dark patch, and just at the left-hand side is where the jewel box is. The choice is simple. I'm sure we all want to be like jewels in the Lord's crown, to show his love and reflect his light, to represent his kingdom well here on earth. And I've got one other picture, which is just a great picture to show, if you can put that on. There we go. That's the Hubble Ultra Deep Space. Each of those is galaxies like our Milky Way. Just shows the greatness of our God. Now, he's so great he made that. We're likened to stars. He says that when he comes, that he'll come to make up the jewels in his, for his crown.
Thanks for listening to this week's message. To learn more about our church, visit c3chch.org.